It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
March into spring with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered 1-gig internet for $59.99 per month, plus a $150 gift card and price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with a free modem, free installation, and free Wi-Fi your way home. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and manage user access for all connected devices with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires May 6, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Together to talk about all the things we used to do. The laughs, the passions, the little Sebastians, the pets we fell into. And we're putting it all in a podcast. Then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pods and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Parks and Recollection. How are you today, Mr. Co-host Alan Yang?
What's going on, Rolo? I'm good. It's a morning record. We usually do afternoons. Morning record, feel refreshed, just watch the episodes, feel good.
I think my caffeine level is exactly right at the moment. I'll chase it for the rest of the day, but right now it's good.
Wow, I don't drink caffeine. Did you know that, Rob?
What?
Yeah,
what?
I don't drink coffee. Isn't that weird? It's kind of weird.
Wait. Somebody as energetic as you? Well, I guess it's right, because you would be off the walls if you added to your own energy.
That is true. I just never started. And so this is actually funny. If I drink even the smallest amount of coffee, like I went out to lunch not that long ago as we were in New York, and I had a Vietnamese coffee for lunch. We were at a Vietnamese place. That night, I didn't fall asleep till 6 a.m.
Oh, no, no, no.
I just had a coffee at lunch and then couldn't. My girlfriend's like, what's going on? I was like, I don't know, man. I had one coffee. So for me, it's the most powerful drug possible. Like if I drink any coffee, my body has no tolerance to caffeine. So
you're lucky. That would be my nightmare. See, I can drink it and then go to sleep.
That's insane.
I have the adverse.
Well,
I know. But anyway, today is a good one, right? How excited are we about Freddy Spaghetti? I think we're pretty excited.
It's a great season two finale, and we're just ramping up. We just did the master plan, your first appearance, and so this is obviously your and Adam's second appearance, and it's an awesome episode. It's really, like we talk about, this is the pocket. To me, this is the pocket, the peak. The show starts to peak right around here, and so it was really fun to watch.
This is written by Mr. Dan Gore, our great friend of the show, and directed by Jason Wolner. The original air date, obviously, as we just said, was season 2, episode 24. That sounds so insane. That's unreal.
Don't forget, Rob, we also then almost immediately shot the first 6 of season 3. So we shot about 30 episodes in one calendar year. Take that, all you streamers out there. Anyone doing a streaming show, myself included, who are doing like, I'm doing 10 episodes or I'm doing 6 episodes. 30 in one year.
30.
30.
Do you know how hard it is to do 10 great episodes of television? How about try doing 30 in a
30
row?
30 decent ones, you know? It's like, try not dropping some duds in there. But yeah, no, it's 30 episodes. And I just saw Gore. I went to the Super Bowl, and I sat near Gore, and he was, we were in the Universal section. So it was fun.
So great. So it aired on May 20th, traditionally the end of the network television season, May 20th, 2010. And basically, the overview is someone shut the government down. I'm not going to mention who it was, but somebody did it. And the parks are closed. Leslie skirts the rules. No. And holds a children's concert in the vacant lot.
The legendary lot. And some quick notes to start the episode. This episode marks the final performance for Paul Schneider as Mark Brodanowitz. It's also some snark in the notes, by the way, one of the producers. It's also the last time anyone on the show mentions Mark in any capacity. So someone just put that in the thing.
The additional in any capacity.
Goodbye, Sweet Prince. Enjoy that big, beautiful architectural map in the sky. Do some city planning. Do some city planning.
Goodbye, Sweet Prince. Yeah, there it is. And Natalie Morales, who plays Lucy, she's in this as well. She was in the last episode. I worked with her on The Grinder after this. Now has become a great director. And what else we got here? What else we got in Nope's Notes?
More guest stars. More guest stars. This episode also features Jamie Williamson reprising her role as Tom's ex-wife, Wendy, and comedian and writer Brian McCann playing the titular Freddy Spaghetti. So that's a big, we'll talk about Brian a little later, but yeah, that's cool. And last Nope's Note, April and Andy share their first kiss in this episode. A lot of romance happening. A lot of romance.
Boing, boing, boing. That's my Howard Stern-esque, you know, sound effects. I'm going to start doing that, I think, in the show.
Constantly, just all the time. That's the coffee. That's the coffee gum.
It is. By the time we get to the end of it, there'll be no more sound effects.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So the beginning of the episode, as you mentioned, the Pawnee government has been shut down due to a budget crisis in the last episode of Master Plan. When Leslie explains at a town hall that a family concert featuring children's entertainer Freddy Spaghetti, played by Brian McCann, must be canceled due to the shutdown, the citizens are outraged. Leslie visits state auditors Chris and Ben, seeking a way to keep the concert, but Ben insists there's simply no money for it. Leslie then goes to Mark to vent about her situation and seek help, only to learn he has taken a buyout and plans to join a construction company. Frustrated, Leslie angrily calls him Mark Brandana Quits. it's a legendary joke. It's almost worth having him on the show just so you can call him Mark Brandana Quits when he leaves the show. So
it's a super funny joke. Do you know any way of remembering who came up with that one?
Mark Brandana Quits. God, I don't know, man. That really feels like there's a lot of wordplay in the show. And so by this point, this is end of season two. Greg is pitching that maybe it was Gore. This was an episode that he wrote. It sounds possibly like him, but I don't want to give him too much credit. So I'm going to say TBD. We don't know. But yeah, it's a great setup for an episode. And really, you see the turn from Ron in this one. And he's happy about the budget being cut at the front. And then by the end of the episode, he has a turn.
When Chris made his appearance, we talked about creating the character and where it came from and the references to Tom Cruise. And I did in my first meeting with you guys in the writer's room, I mentioned a story about how intense Tom is, even when ordering a glass of water. And, we put that in the show and that's in this episode. Chris orders a glass of water and it's almost a word for word, recreation of my story. I told him, I'd like a glass of water. I'd like it to be in a glass. I'd like it to be cold. Good stuff.
We just put it right into the show. And it's also like, look, this is the second episode. Like you're probably your fourth or fifth scene in the show. It's like, yeah, if you come up with these things that kind of explain who the character is or show who they are, and you just pop them in. You just pop them in. This is also a very popular cold open, and it's in, I think it's in a lot of clip reels. It's Pratt falling over the desk on his skates in the very beginning. And this episode is so much physical comedy, and Dan Gore loved writing that stuff in. So in the cold open, like it goes into that theme song and it goes dun 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 and all that shit. Like in the writer's room, we would pitch cold open. So we would go like, okay, and then Andy comes in, he's on skates, and he falls over the desk at the front and it goes bump bump, bump bump. So we just would say bump bump every time. And every time we would pitch, and then we would go on to pitch a lot of things that would make no sense. And then we go bump bump, bump bump, bump, bump. Every time it would just be the same. So and we bump them, and then we kill on. So that was the beginning of that, and that continued for like six more seasons. We would say that over and over again.
Wow, I'm looking ahead at some of our notes. These are amazing notes that we've been handed before we do this one.
Shout out to the notes.
The shout out to the notes. Later in the episode, Anne struggles with her newfound feelings for Andy. April and Andy finally reveal their feelings for each other. A lot of feelings, but April rejects Andy, believing that Andy still has feelings for Anne. Meanwhile, Ron has been assigned a task force to help fix the city's budget problem and is delighted at the prospect of deep municipal cuts, gloating and chanting at the cuts Chris and Ben propose. But when he learns the auditor's plans to fire Leslie, he refuses and offers his job instead. In explaining Leslie's dedication, Ron accidentally alerts them about the Freddy Spaghetti concert. I love Freddy Spaghetti concert. It was like we were shooting, Coachella.
way, way, way later, we would do a huge concert, right? It was like, what was the Unity concert? it was like hundreds of people. And like, so Freddy's Spaghetti was like a mini version of that. We also got to go back and talk about this talking head where you're going to run to the moon. Do you remember shooting that one?
Oh, we should go back and talk about that. Yeah.
Legendary talking head. And again, very character formative, right? Formative for the character. And we actually learned later that the math was kind of off. But do you remember shooting that?
I remember shooting it for a number of reasons. I live in Santa Barbara, and it's not close to L.A. Everybody else in the cast lives in L.A. I got a phone call from Morgan Sackett, our wonderful line producer. And he said, I hate to ask you this. I know that's your day off and you're in Santa Barbara, but God, we have this talking head, and gosh, we're shooting in Pasadena, which is probably 200 miles away. He goes, would you mind? I mean, is there any way you could come in and shoot it? And I read it. It's hilarious. And I drove all the way to 200 miles and shot a 30-second talking head and turned around and drove 200 miles home. So I'm never likely to forget. And then the other thing was, I was super worried about, because I take off running so fast, about pulling a hamstring.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to, like, at my age, just run that fast. And the fast running was what made me laugh about it.
Yes. Well, that's what was my follow-up question, was watching this talking head this morning, like, was this an exaggerated run, like a little bit of a comedy run, or was this your normal Rob Lowe, that's what you look like when you run? What is your opinion? Or do you remember?
I think it's, I think I'm putting a little sauce on it for sure.
That was my guess as well. It's got, because we also have a moment later where Nick is running, and I'm like, he's putting a little sauce on it too, but it's not, it's just enough so it's like, you're not like looking like a bozo, like going way too big. It's just a little bit. But it's also, by the way, that is dangerous. If you ever played like touch football or anything over the age of 40, you know, you're gonna be sore, you're gonna pull something. It's like, if you ever play pickup basketball, if you're over 30, people get injured every game. They're just getting injured every game. You just can't do that. You're not supposed to.
Softball games, you know, that first step out of first base, down, off home plate to first base.
Yeah.
So many people roll those hammies up. And that was my big thing. I just didn't want to do that.
It's a dead sprint. Take it from me, a man who has torn both of his Achilles tendons. You do not want to. We want to stretch. You want to stretch.
That's a good talking head. It's fun when we go through and note sort of, you know, GIFs, memes that live in perpetuity. And I think that's Chris running to the moon is definitely one of them.
Yes, that's up there for sure. Here's a little note about Anne's house and bedroom. This does make me laugh because people don't know what's a stage and what's not a stage. Like, they don't know.
Right.
You know, it's like they just don't know what you can, because you can't tell. And sometimes it's a duplicate of something that exists in real life. So Anne's house in the show is an actual house. The exterior, obviously, is an actual house in Studio City. But what we then did was we duplicated some of the house on the soundstage. And so the inside we have on stage, and then the outside, there's like a little bit of a fake exterior. But we don't know. We never go into her bedroom. So there is a little bit of a funny note here from Greg, which is like, if you see any of the bedroom, it looks kind of normal. But if you actually went into it, we never go in it. It's a twin bed with like 1 foot on either side. There's no room. It's like Anne's bedroom is the saddest thing. Every time you'd walk in, they're like, oh, this is like a child. This is like a doll's bedroom. It's a nothing. You'll just never see in the inside of it. Like when you watch the show, you'll realize you never see the inside of that room. So that's a little fun fact.
I pass the lot all the time as I'm driving around LA and Anne's house, and I go, oh, there's Anne's old house. And like that whole area of the valley, we shot most of Pawnee in the San Fernando Valley. And I mean, I feel like we shot every single inch.
I mean, it's 125 episodes. Yeah, the lot is around Hazeltine and Collins, if anyone is from Studio City. Like, it's in that area. And then, every location is around there. And then sometimes Pasadena, like you said, because the City Hall, Pawnee City Hall is Pasadena City Hall. So sometimes you would try to, as a locations person, you know, find locations near there so you could shoot out your days. Anyway, that's production logistics. We got to talk about this massage scene as well. I mean, that's the scene where you massage Ron first, and then Ron is supposed to massage you. What was that like? What was shooting that like?
The thing that I remember most about this was I could not believe how uncomfortable the wool sweaters are that Nick Offerman has to wear as Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, for those of you who don't like to wear raw wool on your body like me, you just can't believe it. So when I touched him and felt what those sweaters feel like, I almost couldn't breathe. It's the most uncomfortable wardrobe an actor has ever worn. And credits to Nick, man, he just owned it. I mean, and it's so perfect. But that was the beginning, I think, of a long, wonderful flirtation, like bromance between Chris Traeger and Ron Swanson.
Yeah, you do the burger contest later. You do all the stuff. But it's like two very different kinds of men. But, you know, there's some kind of respect, I think, there. Did he feel solidly built? I feel like whenever I slap Nick on the back, he's like, he's pretty solid. It's like this guy's made of oak.
You're talking about two Midwestern boys. You know, he's from Indiana. My family's from Indiana and Ohio. You know, we're solid as oak. But Offerman is truly a rock. He's chiseled out of granite and bacon.
He's very compact, very compact.
What I love about this massage scene is that it starts out with Chris is saying that a massage train will loosen everybody up. And it's not even that I want a massage. I'll be the caboose and Ron Swanson is the locomotive. You just want people loose. And then by the end of the scene, and we have a screenshot for you to look at, your face is so pained that you are not getting a massage from Ron Swanson.
Yeah, that is. He really turns and wants the massage pretty quickly.
He doesn't care about the rest of the meeting whatsoever.
No,
the meeting was a pretext for a massage.
It's also, that did make me laugh also, because it's really important plot information. It's literally Ben saying he's going to fire Leslie Knope, the lead of the show. Like, the lead character of the show is being fired. And then, meanwhile, there's this comedy bit that's, like, very funny, but it's like Ron is trying to defend Leslie that has to massage you. It is, rewatching, it's like, yeah, it's very important plot stuff happening.
And this is what was fun for me. I know I talked about it last episode, is I'm usually the guy involved with or delivering the plot. And in this, I didn't have to do any of that. I was never asked to do any of it. And I loved it.
That's just fun.
I just came in and was funny, or, you know, tried to be anyway, and never worried about any of the other stuff. So, like you said, there's this big scene where the lead of the show is being fired. I don't have anything to do with any of that.
And you're massaging somebody.
I'm just being ridiculous in the corner. And it was so fun.
Yeah, that must be fun.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
Chris and Ben go to Lot 48 to shut the concert down, and Leslie explains everything's been donated and nothing's on the taxpayer's dime. Leslie then learns Freddie Spaghetti has booked another gig and the concert once again seems in a state of peril. Leslie asks Andy to play instead, but he's hit by a car while driving his new motorcycle home to retrieve his guitar, breaking his right arm. Attending to Andy in the hospital, Ann suddenly kisses him, but immediately stops and guiltily walks out. Later, April visits Andy in the hospital and is relieved to see Andy's fine. Finally agrees to go out with him and kisses Andy. In an effort to be upfront and honest, Andy admits that Ann also just kissed him, but that it meant nothing. April angrily storms out, taking back her decision to go out with him. A lot of plot. I mean, this thing flies. This episode is really packed. It just keeps going. I do love that. So there are a couple things. First of all, when Ron shows up at the concert, he's running, and then he slips and falls really hard, and it was kind of not really in the script, kind of Nick's idea, and Aziz has said that this moment's one of his favorite shots in the whole series because it's a comedy fall. It's a comedy pratfall. Yet another pratfall in this episode.
I remember it well because, again, I was so new to the show still. It's my second episode.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. It's my second episode. And Nick he sold out. And multiple times. I mean, and there was no like half-assed actor dainty fake. I mean, he wiped the fuck out. And it's so funny.
It's so funny because Ron Swanson is a character who never moves. You know, he's like a stone, right? That's his character. Like literally the one of his first episodes, he has a hernia and he doesn't move. Like this one, and it's like he slips on a banana peel. I don't know how he did it, but like, yeah, he's very, very talented physical comedian when he has to be. So yeah, it's really funny. Also, almost equally funny to me is when you guys show up, you're wearing like sunglasses, just Ray-Ban sunglasses. You're just
there's something about
cool.
That. I don't remember. I've been trying, as when I watched the episode back, I was trying to remember, there was a huge discussion about the wardrobe that day.
Yeah.
And well, again, because Adam's character was new, mine was new, and we hadn't, you know, when a character's new, you're just kind of figuring out what would they wear. And
yeah,
certain things, you know, look at Ron Swanson. I mean, he was wearing, I think, members only. In the first few episodes,
he's wearing full suits. It's like it just doesn't look like him, right? His hair's different, and then now he's wearing those sweaters all the time, right? And
see, yeah,
but you guys were learning, yeah,
yeah. So we were learning and didn't. But there's something about that outfit that makes me laugh. The way we're walking onto that lot. I also remember it being 1 billion degrees. We would always shoot parks in the summer in the valley, and it was just so hot. You couldn't believe it.
It's,
that was the other thing.
Just the worst. But yeah, you guys walking up like hitmen with the glasses on always made me laugh.
I just want to say, what I love about that is that also, it kind of, if you think about it, like you guys are outsiders coming in, and like you haven't been pawneed yet in a way, yes. Right? So like, here you are, these people from the state budget office, and of course you're going to come in almost like weird nerdy hitmen, and then you slowly become a Pawnee person, and that kind of facade goes away and become who you're supposed to be. That's what I think about.
And you guys start dressing differently from each other too, right? It's like Chris is a little bit sportier, and then Ben's a little bit like hipster nerdier. Speaking of improv, this is another thing that did make me laugh when I saw it. Aubrey improvises the moment. If you watch closely, Andy's walking over to talk to her, and she spits something. I was like, is she spitting? I actually rewound it to see she's spitting out some hay straw. So it's like some straw in her mouth. And episode director Jason Wallner asked her not to do this, but she insisted and thought it would be great. And it did make the final cut. And a little color to this, Jason Wallner is a friend of mine, just the nicest guy. And it's so funny to imagine him trying to tell her to not do that. Wallner's a really talented director. He's a super funny guy. He directed Borat 2. He's on the shorter side. So he looks really young. So he wears a suit to set. So people know he's not a PA. He's not a production assistant. So
amazing.
It's just funny to me to imagine him asking a very stubborn Aubrey Plaza not to constantly spit hay out of her mouth and probably failing to do so. So that's very evocative to me.
I can just see her. I think it's funny.
I think it's funny.
That horrible Aubrey Plaza impersonation I just did.
I know, but it's also like, okay, I won't do it, and then she'll do it anyway. It sounds
that's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay, I won't do it. Does it?
Yeah, then she'll just do it.
I remember the other part. I remember the Freddy Spaghetti concert itself. I'd mentioned earlier that the way Parks was shot was so shocking to me, in the freedom of it, and that usually the way you shoot something, everybody, is you do what they call your coverage. It's you shooting, cameras on you. It's all the different angles of you, and then you turn the camera in a different direction and do all the angles of all the other people, and that's how everything is done. On Parks and Recreation, we had multiple cameras shooting all the time, and you never, quote unquote, turned around and shot the other people. So there might be someone shooting you every single moment you're on the set. And that was like, I have very rarely worked like that. And I remember during Freddy Spaghetti, there's a moment where Amy comes out and tries to get the crowd hyped and is like, if you're happy and, you know, clap your hands, and nobody claps. It was Amy's moment, Amy's whole thing, and I'm way in the back of the crowd, not near anybody, and I am the only person to clap. It was an improv I did, and it made it into the show. And what it taught me, and I'm sure has talked about this, is like, at any moment, you, as an actor, you can be giving something on the show, and it could end up in the show, even when it's not a scene that's about you.
Yeah, and that's actually really, I feel like it's energizing and liberating for actors, because you're totally right. When you turn around, say, you know, we're shooting, I'm in a scene with Rob, and we're cameras are on Rob. You know, I could theoretically, I'm off camera. And some, yeah. Like, look, just let you know how the sauce is made. On some of these, I don't know.
Either one.
There are actors who won't even be there sometimes. Like, I gotta go. And then someone will read the off camera. Like, they won't even be there. Forget acting or improvising. It's like, you could technically lead, or you could technically get a shoulder double, or like the back of the head double. You know, it's like, you don't even. So to actually do the scene and be on camera for almost all of it, it's kind of cool. And that has to do with the lighting. The reason it's possible on this show is because, you know, it's not meant to look like a, you know, David Fincher movie. It's a mockumentary. It's kind of just like an overhead light, and we try to just run and gun and go. So and then you get more. It's called cross shooting sometimes. You know, when you're able to shoot both people in a scene, and it allows people to improvise together. Because if you think about it, and you're only shooting one side of the conversation, and Rob is improvising a bunch, we don't get my side of the conversation, and then you have to turn around and reshoot it all again or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I am. It's one of my proudest moments. It sounds stupid, but it is, as an actor on the show, because it was early on. And, you know, and the other thing is, you don't know, I mean, there's, you know, 150 extras, and it's a big thing. And then and the whole point is nobody claps, and you choose to clap. I mean, I could have Jason Wolner coming over to me and saying, don't do that.
Yeah. And you being terrified of this small man in a suit.
Which happens all the time to me.
We love Jason. Let's see what else. Oh, so there's a big stunt in this. Andy gets hit by a car on his motorcycle. It's almost definitely a stuntman in this case, since he's riding a motorcycle getting hit by a car. But you know, we did talk about the symmetry of, you know, we start the show with Andy in cast with his legs, and then we always kind of wanted him to end up in the hospital again. We thought that would be kind of funny, and in this case it matched, because you know, it worked with this story, and he ended up there again. But it's kind of a testament to, and I'm spoiling a little bit of the rest of the episode, but by the end of season two, he begins the series, no one likes him. End of season two, two women are kissing him. Two principal characters are going in there and kissing him. Like, everyone loves him. And then there's obviously that joke where, you know, a nurse walks in and you know, he's like, don't kiss me. But yeah, that's how much that character evolved.
It was the beginning of the Star-Lord.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's Star Lord. It's Owen Grady, Jurassic World.
Owen Grady.
This is the character names are so funny, man. He's just still a little kid, man. This is going to date the episode, but the new Jurassic World trailer, Jurassic World Dominion or something came out, and there's like the older characters. And I used to love Jurassic Park, so I texted Pratt and I was like, man, it's so awesome seeing like Sam Neill and Laura Dern and Goldblum like in the scenes with you guys. And he texted back immediately. He was like, yeah, oh my God, it's insane. Like, he's like, he's just a little kid. He's like, it's like, it's awesome, man. He's like, he's just really excited. He's like, glad you liked the trailer. Like, just really excited about it.
Before we move on, can I just call up one of my favorite moments from the series? And it's perhaps one of my favorite moments with Rob, with Chris in the series, and it made it into a producer's cut. And I think actually now if on Peacock, NBC's Peacock, you can watch this scene over the credits. It's a deleted scene where Tom and Lucy go off to have sex in Anne's house. And I pulled up the script, by the way, and when she says, hey, do you want to go to that house over there? She just wants to go to a random house and sleep with her boyfriend. But anyway, in the scene, you're just chipper and you're walking up to the front door and you hit, and it's Chris Traeger, hello. And you peek in, right? And you see Tom, hey, Tom Haverford, and who's your friend? And he's like, what the hell? Get out of here, man. And he said, you got it, Tom. And you leave as happy and chipper as you walked in. It is so funny. You're whistling both times. And in the script, it says, Chris walks off whistling to himself. Do you remember shooting that? Do you remember this moment with Aziz?
I do, because yeah, they're having sex. It's
yeah, that's the premise.
It's, they're it's having very... sex in there, and Aziz, like, you know, lays on. He's like, Aziz basically, get the fuck out of here. And I'm like, you got it, Tom. And I just leave, like, yes. nothing has happened.
It's so funny, man. And that's not in the, so that's one of the instances of that got cut for time. And so it's in, you know, if you watch it on Peacock, this episode and Master Plan are both longer than you're allowed to do on network. So network is like something like 21:30 or 21:17, whatever it is. And so these episodes are both much longer on Peacock. Peacock Premium is what I watch it on, so I don't have the commercials. But yeah,
I want to point out to people, you know, because, you know, most people just watch what they watch. They watch it on their phone, or they watch it on a computer, or they watch it on TV, they watch it on Peacock, or they watch it on NBC, or they watch it on Netflix. But like, there's a real difference. I mean, I love Veep, for example. Veep's a hilarious show, right? Guess what? On Veep, if the episode ends up being a certain amount of time, that's what they get to do. On a network show, you have to cut it to a certain time. Have to. And you have to have commercial breaks that have to be at a certain time. So all that affects the storytelling, the writing, the shooting, the editing. And, you know, on streamers, they just get to, there are no rules and they get to do whatever they want. So again, if you ever see something on network television that you like, it's exponentially hard to make it good because of the constraints of working there.
Absolutely. And I felt it through like the editing walls. It's like, that was the nightmare of Mike and Dean's life. Like, editing those episodes was not, you know, making them great, of course, but then it's like, it's 21:53. We have to take 30 seconds out of this, and you're just dying. You're pulling frames out. And now it's wild. You know, I'm looking at the Ted Lasso runtimes and they're like, 46 minutes. I'm like, 46 minutes. This is a half-hour show. It's like, they really range, and you get to do that. I mean, we did that on Master None. We had a 50-minute episode, and we had a 22-minute episode. It's like, it's so, but certainly, like, you know, it's much more like film now with streaming. And, you know, back in the day or on network, it's to the second. It's to the second. Every episode has to be the same, like, to the second. So that was always a constraint. But, you know, sometimes constraints are good. You know, watching these episodes today, it's like, you know, they just move. They move, and it's kind of a lesson. You know, certainly in comedy, faster, funnier, tighter, it all, sometimes those constraints can be good.
And I always love in Parks where you will cut into something way earlier or way later than you would have normally thought when you read the script. And the cut itself makes you laugh because it's because of the timing of it. And I think Parks does that better than, I mean, The Office did it a little bit, but Parks took it to a new level. And I think if you're paying any attention to the editing, you should be paying attention to the editing, because it's super, super like a comedy masterpiece, the editing on the Parks shows, I think.
There's absolutely a lot to be said for economy. Just economy and the storytelling and, you know, all the jokes and the speed. Because, you know, on set, you'll hear that a lot, you know. Poehler would say it all the time, you know, faster, funnier, because it's a little bit faster than people normally talk. It just is. Because if you have, it's just, when you get in the edit and people are talking slowly, it's death. It's just death.
Death.
It really is. Speaking of which, economy in this show, back to the synopsis, at Lot 48, Freddy Spaghetti surprisingly arrives, having been paid by Ben to perform at Leslie's concert. Ben explains he's not a bad person, but the budget still has to be slashed. That night, Leslie sits on a bench in Lot 48 and Mark joins her. Mark tells her that if more people like her worked in local government, he wouldn't be leaving, and gives her plans. He drew up for a park at Lot 48 before giving her a goodbye kiss on the cheek and walking away. The next day, Ron withdraws from the budget task force and appoints Leslie in his place. As Tom and his new girlfriend Lucy are clearing out his office, he notices Ron is wearing a red shirt and black pants, the outfit he always wears the day after having sex. Tom's ex-wife Wendy then appears and kisses Ron, and the two leave together, shocking Tom.
First of all,
soap opera twist.
I love, one of my favorite jokes ever is Ron wearing it was from Tiger Woods. That's where
Tiger
we
Woods.
It. Yeah, when Tiger on Sunday, it's one of my favorite jokes in the show ever.
We have a little bit of a piece of trivia here. When Leslie and Ben are talking during the concert, the Freddy Spaghetti songs continue and are playing in the background, and you could just hear an endless call and response of different types of noodles.
It's
so
funny.
I guess he just had to say noodles for just hours as we shot the rest of the scene. That sometimes happens if you're in the back. You know what I mean? Like, if you're in the shot, you're like, God, I guess got to keep doing stuff. I what made the cut is also he says like tortelloni, macaroni, ziti. Then he just says egg noodles, which is like not the most fun name. But yeah.
We should play the bit about Mark talking about writing the music for Freddy Spaghetti.
Yes.
The Freddy Spaghetti stuff is so good. Freddy Spaghetti is one of my favorite punnians.
Yes. Mark Rivers, drummer for Mouse Rat. He did a lot of the music for Mouse Rat, and he also did the theme song for this show. Here's him talking about Freddy Spaghetti.
So when the producers first asked me to come up with some kid songs for Freddy Spaghetti, the direction was pretty wide open. Just come up with a few silly kid songs that this local Pawnee kids party entertainer would do. But there was no specific joke angle that I remember. So I came up with a couple original songs, and I recorded some demos. One was called Kitty Cat Farm, about a farm that had nothing but hundreds of cats.
Meow, 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 and a mew, 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 down on Kitty Cat Farm.
Another was called Mouthful of Worms.
Don't want to end up with a mouthful of worms. Yuck!
But then they came back and said, nah, what if Freddy Spaghetti is just all about pasta puns? So they asked me to do just a straight up parody of the old 60s novelty song, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, just replacing bikini with linguine. Which at first was, you know, it was a little less exciting for me than writing original songs. But then I came to realize ultimately that that's a much more appropriate joke for the world of the show. Of course, in Pawnee, you wouldn't have a guy writing anything close to clever original songs. You'd have this guy who finds one stupid angle, pasta puns, and he just milks that for all it's worth.
She cooked an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot linguine that she made for the first time today. An itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot linguine. So
in
the strainer, I think it will stay.
So good.
I didn't know it would be pasta-based, and suddenly I was a pasta-based songwriter for a day. And Freddy Spaghetti also, thank you for that, Mark. Very, very informative. Freddy Spaghetti was played by Conan writer Brian McCann. Dan Gore, who wrote the episode, also worked on Conan, and so they were friends. And I think he thought of Brian to play this part, and yeah, he did a great job.
Well, I'm going to pop in, everyone, with an early oops moment, just since we're talking about Freddy Spaghetti, that this is not the first time we see Freddy Spaghetti in the show. And his picture shows up in a slide in season 2's episode, Park Safety, episode 19. And that episode, he's played by one of our editors, Ivan Victor. So, little fun fact.
What's funny is I think, like, Ivan has kind of, at the time, he had kind of crazy hair on top. So, like, it was like, yeah, he looks kind of goofy and, like, not goofy, but he has kind of silly hair. Like, use a photo of him. So then, Freddy Spaghetti, I like to think that in the world of the show, Freddy Spaghetti is kind of like Batman. Like anyone can play him. Just put the costume on. It's a replacement thing. Actually, Batman's not like that, but whatever.
I remember Brian ad-libbing really inappropriate Freddy Spaghetti patter. And
yes, he did a song about paying too much alimony, about his divorce, about his very bitter divorce. It's like, none of this is usable, Brian, but not the tone of the show, but it's very funny.
And again, that's the stuff that you know, I wish there were the extended cuts. That would be so fun to have of this show. Maybe that we'll get NBC to do that at some point.
Another piece of information from the notes. The final moment between Leslie and Mark on the bench was written to mirror their scene in the season 1 finale, Rock Show, where they're kind of looking out over the pit. Dan Gore said he liked the symmetry of having it play a critical and opposite role this finale. This time, last time they sat on the bench and kissed, and it seemed like they might be getting back together. This time they sit on the bench and Mark kisses Leslie goodbye. A note for me, Mark gives plans for a park, and we never mention those plans again. So it's kind of like those plans never come. I mean, she does build a park there, so I guess you could fill in the blanks, but we never specifically mention those plans. But it's still a sweet moment.
I mean, the thing about leaving, you know, leaving shows, being fired from shows, written off shows, whatever it is every actor who's been around long enough will have some experience with that. It's just part of what we do. It just is. And it's rarely personal. It's, you know, it's it's you don't have chemistry with your leading lady, or you can't handle the jokes, or whatever it is. I mean, it happens. I mean, people get fired after table reads. People get fired mid-episode. I mean, it just happens. And, you know, this was, I mean, you were there from the get-go, Alan. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this is a character you guys had an idea for, and it just never came together. And it's just was not the right match for this actor, who's a great actor and who's gone on, who had a great career and still has a great career, but he's not. And if you look at the work he was doing, it's obvious. It's like he's in a different show than everybody else.
Yeah. And to me, it also, you know, made me think about, you know, as an actor, you don't have control over that aspect of your career a lot of the times, you know, and that's just the job of an actor. In some ways, you get hired and you get let go sometimes based on, you know, other people's opinions, whether it's the network, the studio, the showrunner, director, whatever. And, you know, that's kind of the actor's life. It's kind of, you know, the more I reflect on it, the more it's like, you know, it's great. There's obviously huge perks to being an actor. It's really rewarding and it can be artistically fulfilling. But there is that element of you're never quite in complete total control. You know, it's always like it's a cooperation and it's a collaborative experience. So, you know, the character of Mark, you know, I think served his purpose on the show. And, you know, we're really excited to have you guys come in, you know, Adam and Rob come in and really felt like they became part of the town and you know, kind of lasted for the remaining run of the show.
Yep.
Final thoughts on this episode. Great season finale. It's only the second season finale. We had to write so many more.
Yes, it was a season finale, but as you alluded to, we went right into the next episode right after this.
Yeah, we took a very limited break. So Go Big or Go Home, the next episode, I think I ended up writing the draft of that one. We had to write it and come up with essentially the whole Harvest Festival arc, you know, in the interim. So it was a season finale, but at the same time, as Rob said, we had to almost immediately work on the next season. So that's pretty unusual. But that being said, you know, for a 24th episode in a season, that's pretty fucking good.
Unbelievable.
Shall we do an oops moment? There's a math one here. There's a math one here. Chris Traeger's math in the Talking Head where he talks about going to the moon is faulty, possibly justifying his partnership with Ben Wyatt, who's a numbers guy. So Chris says he's run 10 miles a day every day for 18 years, which is 65,000 miles. And he says it's a third of the way to the moon. We've done some fact checking. At his current pace, he actually has about another 3 to 4 years, 3 years to 10 months before he can honestly claim to have run a third of the way to the moon. So a little fact check there. It'll be another 43 years and 8 months past that before he reaches his goal. That being said, you know, if he's continuing to do that, which I think he has, he's now only like 30 years away. So I think he's going
to
do it.
I think Chris could get to the moon. If anybody can, it's Traeger.
He's not even middle-aged yet, according to his math of getting to 150 years old. He's young, you know.
That's also true.
He's still in the prime right now. He's like LeBron. He's just never slowing down.
That's right.
All right, episode MVP, Most Valuable Pawn, Ian. What do you think? Character moment, character, story beat? What do you think, Rob? What's your favorite?
I mean, it's the title of the episode. You know, I kind of like Freddy Spaghetti. I mean, I'm going to go with Freddy Spaghetti because he made me laugh on the day shooting. He looked so weird and I just had a good time clapping to his hijinks.
That's great. I love that. And he doesn't get that much shine in other episodes. So I like giving it to him. I think my runner up is Nick for running and wiping out and also for his acting in the scene where he gets a massage from you. So good job, Nick.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Do you want to go to the town hall? I think you do.
Let's take a trip to the town hall. Where should we do this, Rob?
I think we need to do it at the bench. The bench where the world's greatest romantic couple separates forever. Brenda Anowitz and
that's great.
And Amy. Yeah. Let's do it on that little bench with the moonlight. The moonlight, the dappled moonlight, and the romance.
Want to know something about that bench, actually, is that's the same bench from Rock Show. And it's throughout the second season, that bench sits in Leslie's office.
Yes.
So there's some lovely chemistry and symmetry in that.
I love the notion that Leslie would have brought the bench to have that conversation with Berdanowitz. I like that logic.
I remember the talk in the writer's room was like, she really took the bench all the way out to the lot. It's like, yeah, she did. She's a superhero. She took it out there. Like, yeah, don't think about that. Don't think about her carrying it out there, taking a pickup truck or whatever. All right. So this town hall from that lovely bench at the end of the season comes to us from Kimberly. Kimberly writes, I've always thought it was funny that Anne and Andy have the same names as the famous ragdolls and that Tom and Jerry have the same names as the cat and mouse pair that always taunt each other. This is never referenced even when Anne is Raggedy Ann for Halloween. Is this purely a coincidence or a behind-the-scenes intention? Love the podcast, specifically that you're both fans of the show. What if we hated the show, Rob? Specifically that we're both fans of it. That's a tough pod to do if we hated the show.
Or is it? I think well, I could do fun. A podcast of shows I hate.
Shows you hate? Like, shows you hate watch? Man, I could talk about this for hours.
Forever.
Just hours.
Hours.
Maybe that's just the next pod.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
People you never want to. So as far as the names go, it's really, it's a coincidence. I mean, Tom and Jerry and Ann and Andy. Keep in mind, these characters didn't always have these names, first of all. So, like, Jerry, God, was Jerry always Jerry? Because I remember in the first draft I ever wrote, Donna was named Paris, which is insane. And then
that's
also
amazing.
April was named just Aubrey. Right. So, you know, Jerry.
And then Whitney.
Whitney. I mean, so that was all confusing. Tom and Jerry, Ann and Andy, that's a little bit of a coincidence. This does remind me of a story in the writer's room, speaking of Ann's name. You know, it gets late at night sometimes in the writer's room and Mike is at the computer or whatever, and he's in Final Draft, which is the screenwriting software. And sometimes you'll have to do like a find and replace or something, and you know, you find a name or whatever and you replace it with something. At one point, he accidentally found and replaced Anne's name and wanted to replace it with something. I don't know why this happened, but he replaced her name with a space. So just a space. Do you remember this, Greg? So this happened for the entire script. And so I bet you had to go back in and just look her name every time was a space. So every time, It just fucked up the entire thing. And we're like, oh, no. And you couldn't undo it. And it was like, this is a night. It's 2 a.m. or whatever. And we're in there trying to just replace it.
I have to tell you, I remember that very well.
There's no fixing it, right?
That's the problem. At the time, the Final Draft software, thank you, Final Draft, for everything. You could not undo the find and replace. So I had to then, everybody watched me go through the script and find every instance of where there was an extra space to put Anne's name back into it.
That's what it was. It's like, oh my
God. Go be writer's assistance, people. Go be writer's assistance.
Yeah, It's a tough job. But thank you for the question, Kimberly. You know, we'll do a spinoff, Anne and Andy, Tom and Jerry, the animated spinoff for those four characters. And that'll be future. I think that's it for this episode, Rob. What do you think?
I think this is it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. There's so much more fun to be had here. We love our 5-star reviews that have been showing up on Apple. So if you're inclined, we would love that. Very important for the show. And thanks to this wonderful team, Schulte and Greg, you guys rock. And for me, that's all I got to say from Pawnee today. Alan, what do you say?
Thanks for listening. Goodbye from Pawnee.
Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, aka Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.